Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Dynamic Dojo with Rashida and Robert. It's February 16th, 2014, and it is our Sunday brunch show. Now, as a lot of you already know, we usually broadcast every Sunday at 6 p.m., but it's the third Sunday of the month, so it's time for Sunday brunch. Joining me at the helm today is my co-host and brother in the martial arts, Sifu Robert Deal. Sifu Bob, how are you today?
I'm doing well. You know, Sifu Rusty, you know, yesterday, as you know, was my 28th wedding anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
One girl, I know her as Purple, Susan DeCarl. She's a good friend of the museum. After I announced it, she writes a comment on it that says, "Your poor wifey, give her my condolences." So, right, that's the way it starts.
Oh, God.
So I told my wife that, and she says, "You only got condolences from one person?" Then my niece posts on the wall, and she goes, "Oh, my God, you're making me feel so old," because my sister-in-law was pregnant with my one niece. So now she's 27, almost 28 years old. And then my flower girl, which is my other niece, was 5 years old, and she's turning 33 this year. Next month.
Oh. Well, that puts it into perspective, doesn't it? You know, when, you know, the cute little flower girls and stuff like that are now, like, having families of their own and stuff. But congratulations, bro. I mean, you know, it's like a lot of couples these days, you know, aren't married anymore. And, you know, kudos to you and Jen. Right on.
Yeah, you know, I know a lot of guys that have been married multiple times. Or I know one guy that is actually just turned 50. Him and my wife have the same birthday, except 1 year apart. He's still living with his mom. He's 50.
I shouldn't laugh because, you know, technically I live with my mom too. I mean, granted, I'm the one taking care of her and stuff, but still.
Well, no, there's a difference. I had my mother living as well with me, but you're not living with your mother. She's living with you. You're cohabitating.
That's true.
And same thing with me. But he is actually living in the same room he grew up in 40 years ago.
Okay. I'm kind of
now,
sad.
Now, in his defense, his mother has come down with Alzheimer's now. He is taking care of her.
Oh, okay.
And she is the only one to this day. I've known him for 45 years. And I hadn't seen her for almost 20 years. It happened to be my birthday a few years ago. I see her get out of the car, and she wishes me a happy birthday. And I hadn't seen her in, like, years. And she remembered my birthday.
Aw. Aw, how cool
yeah.
is that? That's
it
very
was
cool.
Very cool.
Right on. Well, cool. So, well, listeners out there, call in and congratulate Sifu Bob on his 28th wedding anniversary. Because that is so cool. You get a round of applause. So our number here is 347-677-0699. Our topic today is going to be traditional weaponry and weaponry training and modern weaponry training. Now, when we're talking about weapons, we're not talking about, you know, projectile weapons like guns, rifles, that kind of thing. We're talking about traditional martial arts weapons, swords, staves, sticks, you know, the whole nine yards. So call in a little bit later after our first segment at around 11:30, and let's talk a little bit about traditional weaponry and modern innovations to traditional weaponry. And with that said, let's go into shout-outs. I'm looking at my notes going, where are we?
Well, are we doing birthdays first or shout-outs?
Oh, no, birthday. Well, I kind of count those in the shout-outs category. So
okay.
Yeah, so let's go into our birthdays. What birthdays do you have for us today?
Well, it's funny. Our first birthday goes out to Ronnie Essett, E-S-S-E-T-T, and he is going to be next week's guest as an amateur boxer. His birthday
Very
is
cool.
on the 19th. Person I just mentioned, Susan Jacarl, her birthday is on the 20th. Great second-generation JKE practitioner, Tim Tackett. His
right on.
Birthday is on the 21st. Old-timer, Donnie Williams.
Mm-hmm.
His birthday is on the 22nd. And another fabulous master in the martial arts, Michael D. Pasquale Jr. His birthday
right
is on the 22nd.
That's awesome. Happy birthday to all those martial arts practitioners and masters. And for everyone else out there that has a birthday this week, this tune's for you. Birthday, everybody. Right on. Have an enjoyable week. I am a firm believer that when it's your birthday, you have permission to be celebrating all freaking week.
Absolutely. I think it should be like Chinese New Year. 1 month.
I'm serious. I that's what I'm going to be doing when I turn 50. Oh, gosh, I just dated myself again. But anyway,
hey, I you know what? I date myself a lot. I'm the only one who won't say no to me.
That's awesome. Right on. And before I forget, you know, I can't tell if, I guess maybe Bob can tell me because he can hear. I'm going to apologize in advance for any bad audio quality. Sifu Bob had told me a little bit earlier that my audio is breaking up and no one else is breaking up. My music isn't breaking up. Sifu Bob isn't breaking up, so I can't tell. So I'll just go ahead and apologize in advance because it might be just a weird Skype day on Skype. So anyhow, if I keep breaking up,
I
apologize.
It very well could be. Now you sound like a husband, actually, because we just all apologize in advance because we are bound to screw up. We just start a conversation with our wives' office. I'm sorry. We did nothing wrong, but I'm sorry.
That's you get a rib shot for that. All right. Well, let's get into our other shout-outs. I know you've got a few.
You want to go first? You want me to?
Go for it.
Okay. Well, of course, we're going to be doing this every week. I want to put a shout-out to Michael Matsuda of the Martial Arts History Museum here in Burbank, California, where it is nice and sunny. It's been in 81 degrees the last few days. I thought I'd add that, Rusty. this is going to be an amazing trade show. The Old Dragon Fest is back. It's
Yay.
At the Burbank Holiday Inn on First Street in Angelino in the city of Burbank in the Grand Ballroom on May 18th. And I'm going to share with you who will be there. It will be separated into sections. You'll have a history section, which will have some of the icons of the martial arts world, like Lorenzo Lamas, Cynthia Rothrock, Richard Norton, Art Camacho, Takaboda, Kerry Ogawa Wong, James Hong, Peter Kwong, Bill Ryazaki, Eric Lee, and Rodney Kageyama. That will be in the history section. Then you have an author section of those who have either written books in the past or have new books coming out. And those authors include Doug Wong, Alan Woodman, Benny the Jet Urquidez, Peter Sugarfoot Cunningham, Simon Ree, Lambert Chung, Saul... you're always better at doing the names than I do. Kaliwalu, Don Baird, John Crane, Jerome Liu's Hyperactive Monkey Book, Steve Sexton. Then you've got the film section. Those will include Fumio Demura, Shin Koyamada, Donnie Williams, Gorilla Pictures, Johnny Ray Casca from The Gathering, The Stunt People, CNC Movie Factory, Arts and Crafts Section. You will have Paul Wee, which is the head artist on The Simpsons, and he is the actual one. He is the person who actually draws Homer. He was honored in the Honor Society because he's one of Sifu Wong's students, Doug Wong. You're going to have Mel's Props, Kano Kid, My Scent Image, Justin Waggle, Martial Arts Strategy Game, Hollis Jewelry, 2K Customs, Traditions Shirts, and the Artistry of Ed Parker. Tradition Shirts is the Wilson brothers, Don and James Wilson. Martial arts vendors will include Sidekick Publications, which is Alan Woodman, Dynamic Dojo Radio, Valley Martial Arts Supplies, Kill Combat Instruments, Showbiz, Worldwide Martial Arts Council, United Martial Arts for Christ, Filipino Arts with Felix Roiles. Did I pronounce that right? R-O-I-L-E-S?
R-O-I-L-E-S?
L-E-S, yeah.
Oh, it's probably Roiles or something, but yeah.
And that is the list of who's going to be there. There's going to be 46 tables. It's going to be an amazing event. Sifu Rusty's coming down. We're going to be doing interviews. We're going to be trying to warm up the crowd before the event, maybe give out some tradition shirts, hold a trivia contest, that sort of thing, to have just a fun day. It's going to be an amazing time.
It's going to be a whole bunch of fun. And me and the gals at the Pacific Association of Women's Martial Artists, we're working on getting a booth there also, hopefully near our booth. So that way I can kind of go back and forth if I need to. But we're working on that. So that's going to be totally fun. Now, speaking of the Pacific Association of Women Martial Artists, I want to put a announcement out there about the 37th annual PAMA training camp. The Pacific Association of Women Martial Artists is holding its training camp this year on September 19th through the 22nd, and our theme this year is Diversity, Empowerment, Community. And we're going to be having this year's camp at last year's venue, Aldersgate Retreat in Turner, Oregon. It's a beautiful venue, absolutely great, great cabins and stuff like that. And this particular camp is open to women and girls in the martial arts, whether new to martial arts or seasoned practitioners. So, you know, if you want more information about the Pacific Association of Women's Martial Artists, just go to PAWMA.org, PAWMA.org. And this particular camp, like I said, it's been going around for 37 years. It's the oldest. Well, I was going to say one of the oldest, if not the oldest, women's only martial arts organization in the United States. So, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. I've got a question. Because, you know, times are tough, you know, doesn't PAWMA offer, and I'll put this out there, don't they offer a scholarship program for those in need that would like to attend?
We do. We have a partial scholarship program. It's more like a kind of like a work study, a volunteer thing. So if you volunteer to work, meaning like set up, helping the events and other classes, you know, set up in their rooms and stuff like that, food, snacks, manning the front desk, registration, that kind of thing, then you get a partial scholarship. We used to give out full scholarships to the event. It did not include travel or all of it did not include travel. I was going to say and it didn't include accommodations, but I just remembered that the actual cost of the camp includes accommodations. So we do offer the, we used to offer that, but I think as of last year, we're offering quite a substantial discount, like 3/4 discount on the tuition. So we usually give that out in raffles on the organization. So, you know, you buy raffle tickets, and then if you win the raffle, you get $200 off the original cost of camp. Now, camp can run anywhere between $200 to $350 for the whole weekend. So, you know, if you get $200 gift certificate, then that's only $100 for a whole weekend, and that includes accommodation and food, all three meals.
Wow.
Every day. I know, right? So it's a cool camp, and it's open to anyone. Now, because it says, because the organization is called Pacific Association of Women Martial Artists, it doesn't mean that you have to be from the West Coast. We have women from all over the country coming to our camps. We've even had people coming in from Israel, Germany, I mean, other countries. So, you know, open to everybody. So if you're
a
woman.
Even one of your board members. Even one of your board members is from the Midwest.
Yeah, from the Midwest. We've got teachers coming in from Canada, Mexico. It's awesome. So
wow.
Do check it out. Do check
yeah.
it out. All righty.
And now,
I'm glad
you did that one
uh-huh.
because I had lost the shout out. So if it was still my turn, I would have been lost.
I don't have this in my notes, but I just want to put a shout-out out there to my student that tested for black belt yesterday, Noelle Zank. She's been with me for about 8 years, and yesterday she went through 6 hours of torture to get her black belt, and she did it with flying colors. It's so amazing, and, you know, and I know that martial arts instructors know this, it's so amazing to watch your students test for any rank, especially black belt, because, you know, a lot of times when you get to that black belt rank, your students just pull stuff out of nowhere, you know, and just completely surprise you. And Noelle completely blew the testing board out of the water because she's, let's just say she's come a very long way, and she broke down a lot of barriers and really found out that she's capable of a whole heck of a lot more than she thought she could do, and completely just blew us out of the water. We were like, whoa. It got to the point where several of the black belts were afraid to, like, attack her during self-defense. So it was like, you know, people, I don't know if I want to go in there. Then you know it's time for her to be promoted. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's like, where'd that eye gouge come from?
Pretty much. I mean, she was pulling out the eye gouges and the hair pulls and the quick little what we call tiger tail kicks to the groin. You know, I want to send another shout out there to seeing Vincent Gist, who was a man that took a lot of the brunt of the Noel strikes, and I don't think he was wearing a cup. So, but he took it like a champ and really allowed Noelle to learn what she's capable of, because he's a pretty big guy. He's not really tall, but he's big, and he doesn't mess around. So she made Vince think twice about coming at her. So kudos to her for that. Congratulations, Noelle.
Good for her.
Yay. All right.
Well, you know what?
Uh-huh.
Find out so interesting, and I love, and this goes on to anything. When I was coaching my kids in sports, because I coached my daughter in baseball and volleyball, and I coached my son in baseball, and I coached Bree in soccer as well, but I coached Brandon in basketball and baseball and soccer, and teaching martial arts is the same when. They're coming up through the ranks, and when they started with you, they couldn't walk across the floor without tripping, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you see them blossom into this that you love, because they've come so far and they've learned so much.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is.
Awesome.
Yeah,
it is. It's a fulfillment. And last night I was mm-hmm. completely exhausted after dinner. As you saw on Facebook, I was like, why am I so tired?
Yeah.
It's only like 9 o'clock. And it made sense. A lot of people said that, you know, it is mentally taxing for the instructors, especially because of emotional investment and having to, like, think through, you know, administering a test and stuff like that. And, you know, 6 hours of, you know, I guess being emotionally invested in this, you know what I mean? I was like, after dinner, I was like, I just want to go home and die. I'm afraid I made it home because I started falling asleep on the way home. I'm like, oh, my God, this is awful. But
damn.
Right on. Yeah, I know. But, you know, Noelle goes, I think I'm just going to stay home today. It turns out that she got called into work. So I was like, man. Yeah, she specifically told her work that she needed Sunday off, but they, quote-unquote, mistakenly scheduled her anyway. And I said, so does the management work on Sundays? And she kind of thought for a second. She goes, no. And I'm like, figures. Yeah. Let the minions do the work. It kind of pissed me off. But she deserves
to rest. Oh, yeah. After a test like that, you need a day to recoup.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, congratulations to Noelle. So let's move on to the health news, shall we?
No, I still have two shout-outs. What are you talking about?
What? Two shout-outs? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's not do health news. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I've got two, and they both involve Doug Wong. One,
okay.
The Martial Arts History Museum next Saturday in Burbank at the museum is holding Arky Wong Day.
It starts
at 4 o'clock, admission is $8, and they're going to pay tribute to the late, great Arky Wong, which was one of Doug Wong's teachers. He was considered the father of Kung Fu, bringing it to the United States, because he brought it here in the 60s, and it was something that wasn't taught. My other shout-out goes out to Doug Wong, which is having any of our southern listeners, he's having a seminar in Mexicali on March 15th, 2014. Don't miss this great seminar with CJO Douglas L. Wong. That is just says translated by Google. Okay. So it came out in Spanish, and Doug pressed translate. So kudos to Doug Wong. Hopefully he'll have a great seminar. If anybody's listening, located in Mexicali, Mexico, join him. He's a great instructor, great guy, good heart. It's going to be a great seminar.
Yes, do check it out if you're down there.
And there you go. There are my shout-outs.
Oh, okay. Right on. Sorry about that. I know you said I had a couple shout-outs, and I just bleep, just over the top of my head. I need more coffee. Sorry about that, bro.
That's okay.
All right. Well, I guess now let's get into health news. It's actually not quite health news, as it is more health trivia, more like body trivia, amazing facts about your body. And I'm just going to share four amazing facts about the human body. So, did you know that coughing can cause air to move through your windpipe up faster than the speed of sound? That's over 1,000 feet per second. However, when it comes out of your mouth, and I don't understand why, it supposedly comes out of your mouth at around 60 to 70 miles per hour. So, I'm guessing it's just because of the pressure that your lungs can generate in that short distance between your lungs and up through your trachea. And then when it comes out of your mouth, it comes out at 60 miles an hour, slowed down by air. Oh, that's interesting. So, fact number two, did you know that if you stretched out all of the human body's blood vessels, it would turn out to be about 60,000 miles long? That's long enough to go around the world twice.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's amazing.
I know. Isn't that crazy? That's wild. And this one was really wild. Did you know that the average human dream lasts only 2 to 3 seconds? And most people have at least 7 dreams per night. You know, I thought that was really kind of weird because, you know, where you have those dreams that seem like that the time in the dream takes hours or even like a day or two. And they only last 3 seconds. It's so weird.
See, that's amazing.
It is amazing because, you know, I've always told my students that, you know, when you train in martial arts, you know, doesn't matter that you necessarily train slowly for targeting or anything like that, because your subconscious has no comprehension of time, linear time, right? Mm-hmm. So you can move slow, but as long as you have the intention of, I'm going to rip this guy's throat out, I'm going to take his eye out, I'm going to break his knee, and you have that intention and still train for moving fast, you know, I guess maybe that explains why when you're in, you know, self-defense situations like that where it seems it takes a long time. I think it's when your subconscious, like, gets in there, it just has no comprehension of linear time. I thought that was just so weird. All right. So last health trivia or human body trivia. And this is kind of gross. And I knew about this, but it still grosses me out. Humans shed about 600,000 particles of skin every hour. That's like 1.5 pounds a year. Pounds. 1.5 pounds. By 70 years of age, an average human will have lost 105 pounds of skin.
Wow.
Yeah, considering that that's what a lot of dust is. So if you're dusting around your house, you know, or you're sweeping the floor and you see these dust bunnies and stuff, you can look at that dust bunny and go, I wonder how much of that is human skin. It's a gross thought, isn't it?
Well, and with that, I wonder, as we're sleeping, how much dead skin gets onto the mattress through sweat and all that.
That's another thing, and, you know, I don't remember if I did a story on this or not about dust mites, but everywhere you go, like in your bed, in your pillow, in the carpets or whatever, there are these microscopic insects, and they're dust mites, and they feed on your dead skin, and it's just, I know, right? It's just really gross.
Wow.
And there's also, with most people, I think there are also, I don't know what the name of them are, but, you know, most people just call them, you know, eyelash mites. Inside the pores of the where your eyelashes come out of, a lot of times there are microscopic mites that live kind of like down by the root of your eyelashes, and they just kind of hang out. They don't hurt anything. They don't climb in your eye and start swimming around going, woo, hey, look, hot tub. They just hang out. And they feed on the oils and stuff like that. And it's kind of like, gross, really? You know, kind of freaks out. And somewhere on the internet, I know there's a picture of these mites in the follicle of an eyelash. And kind of freaky. All right.
Well, there is, I don't know if they're up there or not, Rusty, but there is a company down here called Sit and Sleep. They're a huge mattress chain down here.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, you know, their whole thing is, if your mattress is 8 years old or older, it's time to replace.
Yeah.
And they show
pictures
of these dust mites that look absolutely hideous. They show them with claws and fangs.
Yeah, I know, right? And yeah, you should. And there is a, I read something on the internet about, like when you buy a mattress, by the time you get rid of it, like maybe at the 8-year point or whatever, it would have gained a certain amount of poundage of dead skin and dead mites and stuff like that. And that really puts a whole new spin on, you know, the firmness of your bed. I mean, it's kind of like gross. All right. Let's move on to
Weird News.
Something a little less gross.
Something a little less gross. This is a study. It was now that Seattle's legalized it, this probably came out of Seattle. But these scientists, I guess, have nothing better to do. They did a scientific research on mice to explain why when people smoke pot, they get the munchies. Right?
So there's actually a study. Okay.
There's actually a study. scientists may have discovered why marijuana makes users run for the Pringles. In a study published on Sunday in the journal Nature Neuroscience, researchers have tied the increasing hunger experienced by users to the drug's ability to produce a higher sensitivity to scents and flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Smithsonian Magazine explains how researchers reached this conclusion. The scientists began by exposing mice increasingly used in neuroscientific research because of the surprising amount of cognitive similarities they share with humans to banana and almond oils as a test of sensitivity to scent. When they did so, the mice sniffed the oils extensively at first, then stopped showing interest in them, a well-known phenomenon called olfactory habilitation. Mice that were dosed with THC, however, kept on sniffing, demonstrating an enhanced sensitivity to the scent. The THC-dosed mice also ate much more chow when given the chance, showing an increased appetite. The heightened sense of smell is, as the researchers assert, linked to increasing appetite. As Live Science previously reported, scientists and pharmacology companies are interested in the way marijuana affects hunger, both for patients who suffer from a lack of appetite, like those given through chemotherapy, and people looking to lose weight, which was actually quite interesting. That
right.
Because of the heightened senses, it makes you hungry.
Yeah, and that would make sense because, you know, I mean, you know, granted, I don't smoke pot anymore, but
right, but you don't smoke any less either.
Yeah, no, you know, one time I just had a bad experience, and you know, I just prefer not to touch it, you know, for the sake of getting high. So if I've got any students out there listening, they're probably going, what? Seafood? Well, you know what? I was a teenager. I was young and dumb, and, you know, I tried it, and, you know, and to tell you the truth, it does help with pain. But, you know, I do know, getting back to the subject, that, you know, if you do have to use a lot of your mental faculties in order to be aware of something, it does make you hungry. It's crazy how
it is strange. Now, I'll tell you my experience. I was like you. I was a teenager, peer pressure and all, and I tried it, and I actually got sick from it because my father was a retired cop, and he instilled this thing in me: if you ever try drugs, you better hope the cops catch you before I do, because I'll kill you.
Right.
And it actually got me so nervous, it got me physically sick, and that was the last time I ever did it.
Yeah. Well, you know, THC has different effects for some people. So, you know, I don't doubt that it made you sick. You know, your body chemistry probably said, oh, God, what the hell is this crap? You know?
Right.
So, but that's it. That is interesting, though. That's an interesting, you know, at first I thought it was funny that, oh, my gosh, there's a study about it. But, you know, that was interesting when it came to dosing those mice with THC and being sensitive to scents and stuff like that. That's pretty cool.
That is very cool. Now, let's move on to weird laws. These weird laws come out of Oregon. I was sort of doing the West Coast last few weeks. Babies may not be carried on the running board of a car. Now, this seems like common sense. You're not going to be outside a moving car carrying a baby.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm wondering
whether or not this is...
You're
not Michael Jackson.
You're not Michael Jackson, but, you know, I'm wondering if this is a throwback from, like, the 1920s and the 1930s where they had the
running
huge...
boards.
Yeah, when we had those huge running boards, yeah.
That's
cool.
And this I bet this next law must be a throwback from the 50s. Now, in the 50s, you did not pump your own gas.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no extra charge for it either.
Yeah.
You pulled up, they pumped your gas for you, and they checked your oil, they washed your windows. That was a full-service filling station.
Mm-hmm.
Drivers may not pump their own gas. It's a law on the books.
Yes, and they still can't. It's so that way people, it's all about jobs. It's all about jobs. But when I drove through Oregon on my motorcycle, I refused to let attendants touch my motorcycle. And they let me. They're like, oh, you can pump your own gas. I'm like, thank you.
So that is still a big thing in Oregon?
It is. It is. It's a statewide law. You cannot pump your own gas. When you go, when you drive into a gas station, you know, you drive over the little ding-ding thing, you know,
right.
that piece of wire, ding-ding, and then someone just comes right on out. You tell them how much you want or tell them you want to fill up. They run your card right there and everything and blah, blah, blah. And they check your oil, clean your windows, hold on yards.
Wow.
Cool.
Now, so there's no, you don't find signs out there that say, here's a price for full service and here's a price for self-serve.
No.
It's one price.
Go in there. It's one price.
Well, if it was one price, who'd want to pump their own gas anyway?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to get out of the car.
Right. You know, I think it's just about jobs, you know, gas station attendant.
That's great, actually.
It is.
A door on a car may not be left open longer than is necessary. An adult may not show a minor any piece of classical artwork which depicts sexual excitement. I don't remember any piece. I don't remember
I don't
the Statue
either.
Of David or anything that was depicting sexual excitement.
I've never seen one, ever.
Drivers must yield to pedestrians who are standing on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, cars should not be driving on the sidewalk to have to worry about the pedestrians.
I think that means if they're standing on the sidewalk at a, you know, on a corner waiting to cross the street.
Waiting
it's
to cross,
here in
must
Seattle
stop.
Too. Yeah, it's a law here in Seattle too. I got pulled over because I refused to give the right of way to a pedestrian, and I have no idea where that pedestrian came from. I'm firmly convinced that it was a bait, because it was like, you know, a few days after the new law came into action, and I just like, you know, passed the corner, and then red and blues came up behind me. Did you see that pedestrian on the corner? No, there was no pedestrian there. It was like crap.
Well, it's funny you say that. One time in Burbank, right by B of A on Magnolia, they had a line of cop cars and bikes, and they had a guy at the corner acting like he was crossing the street, and once he stepped down, if a car passed, cops went and got him.
Yeah. In a way, it's a great law. But, you know, I guess it depends on the situation. I mean, because you might have, like, a complete idiot stepping off of the sidewalk. You know what I mean? Like, somebody drunk, you know, drunk or high, you know, that has no idea that they're stepping into traffic and stuff like that. And, you know, if you slam on your brakes, that can be a little more dangerous, because then you got you that aren't expecting it that'll run into you too. So it's a great law, but personally I think people shouldn't be like one jaywalking, you know, go to a crosswalk or go to the corner, you know, don't be stepping off halfway in between the streets and stuff like that.
Exactly. Well, a couple months ago I was in Glendale on Glendale Boulevard or Glendale Avenue, and I was almost at the crosswalk. I was driving, and this lady, homeless, cart, everything. And I had the green light, and I was halfway through the intersection, and she just stepped off. She just started crossing the street against the red light, and I punched it to get fire, because if I hadn't, I would have hit her.
Yeah. See,
and then I thought
if
I would have tagged her card or something, I would have gotten written up for failing to yield.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like I hate it when people like get halfway into the street, you know, waiting for you to go by, right? And a lot of times what happens is it's like you go by, but the car behind you can't see the pedestrian because you cover them for that second, and they're coming up fast behind you, and then boom, you hit a pedestrian. And it's, I don't know, it's a great law for you know, pedestrians having the right of way, but depending on the stupidity of drivers, I don't know.
Right, right. Or yeah. When I go pick my daughter up from school, it takes me forever because there is a line of kids crossing that crosswalk, and they don't wait for anybody. They
yeah.
will time it where you have to wait, and I've waited like 15 minutes because they just keep crossing.
Wow.
Every once in a while, there will be an administrator stopping them and saying, now
oh
it's time
God.
For these cars to go.
Right.
Okay, there's our rant
okay.
for the day.
There's our rant for the day. Let's move on.
Now, this one I don't get. One may not test their physical endurance while driving a car on the highway. How is this even possible?
I don't know.
What, are you going to jump out and start running next to your car?
I don't know. That made no sense to me either.
None. It is illegal to place a container filled with human fecal matter on the side of any highway. No kidding. Really? They have
really?
To make a law for this.
Yeah, gross.
It is illegal to buy or sell marijuana, but it is legal to smoke it on your own property. Sound familiar, Rusty?
Sound familiar. Yay, Washington.
Yes, exactly. One may not bathe without wearing suitable clothing. I bathe naked. I'm sorry. That's just me. And
oh,
it probably goes back to the 20s or 30s where people bathed
does.
In their bathing suits.
Maybe, yeah.
Canned corn is not to be used as bait for fishing.
Okay.
Wow. I'm sorry. What was wrong with what? You couldn't get worms that day?
Yeah. Jeez. Huh.
Dishes dry.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
The peer review statute prohibits you from finding out details of any written or oral discussion about your medical treatment.
Okay.
Wow, that's a little strange, huh?
Well, it is, because you would think, I mean, I know that, you know, other people can't get into your medical records, but
right, but
why would it prevent the patient from, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like it prohibits the patient from getting any access to their own medical records.
Right, exactly. It
huh.
is illegal to, now this just ruins my whole game plan during sex. This
huh.
just ruins everything for me. It is illegal to whisper dirty things in your lover's ear during sex.
What? And how are they going to police yeah. that? I mean, really now?
What the hell?
They have law enforcement agencies in Oregon that are real voyeurs.
Oh,
now,
man.
Now, for the last one, before we get into our discussion,
okay.
Ice cream may not be eaten on Sundays. Of course, throughout
that's crazy.
There's a lot of things that are not able to be done on Sundays, like go bowling, shopping, buy alcohol. A lot of things, a lot of states do not do certain things on Sundays.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, you know, you would figure that, you know, businesses would be closed, but wow, if you can't even eat ice cream. I mean, does that count as like if you go to the grocery store that's open on Sundays, does that count with if you buy ice cream there and then take it home? I mean, how are they going to police any of this? That's absolutely nuts. Oh, man. All right. Was that it for Weird Laws? For
that was it.
All right. Well, let's do this. It's about 11:44 right now, and at about noon, we're going to be talking a little bit about, after we come back from break, me and Bob are going to be talking a little bit about traditional weaponry, and then we'll be joined by Humberto Gonzalez, who will be joining us to talk about some of his weapons innovation. So Humberto, if you're listening, if you call in, please please just hold until we get you on the air here. It might be, we're running a little behind schedule. It might be about 5 minutes or so after 12 noon where we can pick up your line. So for all of our callers, our number here is 347-677-0699. Please call in and join the conversation about sorry, somebody was like texting me. Oh, that's you.
But, that was you.
Anyone on chat? I don't know yet. Let's see. Let's find out. I haven't gotten on chat yet. But after we come back from the soft break, we'll be talking a little bit about traditional weaponry and the pros and cons of it. And then we'll be bringing on our guest, Humberto Gonzalez. So we'll be right back after this.
Dear parents, much of what we learn in this world comes directly from you.
Whatever your message is, it will become part of us forever.
Please teach us to accept one another. Teach us to respect one another.
Please, do not fill our minds with hatred. Do not expose us to bigotry.
Do not teach us to judge each other
by race,
religion,
orientation, or the color of our skin.
Teach us the concept of tolerance.
Teach us to understand one another.
Teach us to accept people
of different cultures
and persons with different beliefs than yours.
Please help us to create a world
where every man, woman, and child is treated equally.
Dear parents,
please don't teach us words of hate.
We learn from you every moment.
If you use certain words
which might be hurtful to others,
we will repeat that word.
Please don't show us acts of hate.
If you act against people of different faith,
we will repeat your actions.
Dear parents, we are your children.
And we are relying on you
to help us create a world where every person is tolerant of one another.
This is Nnamdi Asamoah. I play football for the Philadelphia Eagles, but what I do off the field with United Way might be more important. I'm a volunteer tutor and mentor. Why? Because over a million kids a year drop out of school, and that's not okay. It takes 12 years to create a graduate, but it takes about the same time to create a dropout. And the difference between a child becoming one or the other could be me, or it could be you. Studies show that if we get to these kids earlier, their chances are better. And kids who read well by third grade are more likely to graduate. So join me in United Way. Suit up and take the pledge. Become a volunteer reader, tutor, or mentor. Because when a child succeeds, we all succeed. Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Take the pledge at unitedway.org. Brought to you by United Way, the Ad Council, and the National Football League.
And now, on with the show.
All right. And we are back. If you're just now tuning in, this is Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio with Restita and Robert. So, Robert, let's go ahead and start our discussion. So, for our listeners out there, our phone number is 347-677-0699. Our topic is the traditional weaponry and modern, traditional and modern training and weaponry and modern innovations on weapons. So what types of traditional weaponry did you work with when you were coming up in martial arts, Bob?
Well, of course, I worked with sticks coming up. Spear, Pudao, you know, some eagle beak guando, which rolls over into the Pudao. I worked with nunchucks.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit, bow or staff. I worked Little Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Little Joe, that sounds like Bonanza.
Yeah, I worked with similar. I worked with the gamut of Japanese weapons in my Japanese martial art training. I worked with Japanese sword and Chinese swords, Chinese and Japanese pole arms, sticks, staves, whole nine yards. And, you know, a lot of traditional martial arts out there still today use the use of traditional weapons as part of their training and as part of their grading system. So, you know, like, for example, many karate styles will use not only the bow and jo, but also nunchaku, tonfa, you know, even katana and stuff like that, and use the training and the forms of those particular weapons. I almost forgot Sai. Sai was another one of my favorites. They use a lot of those traditional Japanese weapons as part of their training. And, you know, I'm a firm believer in that, you know, training in weapons really shows a student a lot about the culture from where that particular is from. You know, and then you've got, you know, the other side of the coin where people think that traditional weaponry is useless and, you know, who's going to walk around with a sword anymore? Who's going to walk around with a tonfa anymore and stuff like that? And, you know, so you got both sides of the coin. And that's kind of where this discussion is going. So if anyone out there that's listening wants to join in the discussion, give us a call, 347-677-0699. We also have a chat board. So if you're listening live on our Blog Talk Radio show Marquee, just scroll down a little bit. You'll find a chat board. You can type your questions there. So now what's your take on traditional weaponry? Do you find it useful in today's world? You know, are you kind of neutral about the subject? Well, what's your take on it?
Well, you know what? I'm glad you asked it the way you asked it, because I'm sort of neutral, but I'm on the fence. I believe in traditional weapons. Now, in today's society, you're not going to use a sword, a spear, that sort of weapon, except they transfer to other things. Now, I love the body mechanics behind the usage of those weapons.
Yes.
The pivot, the hips, the arm, which can transfer into other tools. Now, where would a spear be useful in today's society? To those who frequent pool halls, taverns, whatever.
Yeah.
A spear transfers into, or a bow transfers into a pool cue.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Same body mechanics, same weapon. It's an extension of the hand. At one time, those traditional weapons were invented, whether it was the trident or the tonfa. Now, the tonfa is a very widely used weapon. It's used by the police. It's called a PR-24.
Mm-hmm.
Same shape, same handle.
Mm-hmm.
They were invented for different usage. The Eagle Beak Kwando, the Pudao, they were made to take out legs on horses to dismount riders on horseback.
Mm-hmm.
Not very practical today, but at the time they had their practicality. Every weapon you see had their practicality at one time, maybe not in today's society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dagger has uses in today's society. The knife, shorter weapon.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, that's where I'm at with it. I personally value traditional weaponry for the cultural aspect and the historical aspect of it. You know, like you said, and I completely agree with you, at the time, you know, for example, the Japanese sword, you know, that was a perfect weapon for that time. The Pudao and the Kwandao and all the other polearm weapons and Naginata and stuff, those were perfect weapons for that time when everyone had access to similar, if not same, weapons. But, you know, nowadays we've got, you know, we've got firearms and bazookas and cannons and, you know, and all this other kind of stuff, you know. So, you know, in regards to, like, let's say a spear against someone with a firearm, we know that that's not practical. However, you know, I'm a firm believer in that the mechanics of and having the skill of using a weapon like a three-sectional staff or a nunchaku, you know, or a katana is important. As long as the practitioner knows that it is a way of learning about the culture, that it is a way of, you know, keeping with the tradition of your art. I mean, I've seen like teenagers out there that honestly think that you can, you know, walk around with the sword and they'd be invincible because the quote-unquote, katana, since a katana is able to cut through bamboo and stuff like that, they should be able to cut through a human body, and because that's how they were, how the katanas were tested. You know, there's so many, you know, stereotypes and misconceptions about such traditional weapons like the sword that, you know, it can hurt the practice of the art, don't you think? I mean, I had some kid literally tell me, did you? Oh, go ahead.
Well, and I wanted to bring up again, and you just brought it up, the body mechanics. If you take a stick, you've got a stick in your hand, and you do a number one strike, let's say it's a wood tick, not a lob tick, let's say it's a wood tick, so it's going to stop, pull back, instead of slice through. If you do a number one strike, take the stick out of your hand and extend your fist in a punching manner. Guess what?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same body mechanics.
Right,
exactly.
You've got
the hip into it. You've got the pivot. You've got everything right there. Same thing. The body mechanics is what I feel. The body mechanics is what drives it, and it carries on into other things.
Yes, I agree. And I'm in full agreement with it. And, you know, back to what you were talking about earlier, the PR-24, patterned after the Tanfa. I really love that you brought that up because, you know, another part of today's topic is, you know, the modern modifications and innovations to traditional weapons. Because, you know, I know a few police officers here in Seattle that carry a PR-24, and these days they come in two models, the PR-24. The model that's more patterned, you know, after the traditional aspect of it, with one piece or a piece that's, you know, or two pieces, the handle and the baton part of it, but it's like in one piece. And then you've got the ratcheted handle ones where you just hold onto the handle and you start flicking your wrist and it'll ratchet around and stuff like that. A lot of people think that the ratcheted variation of the PR-24 is really cool because you don't have to worry about training to let go of your grip slightly and then timing your grip and stuff like that. You know, some people think that's a really great innovation to the PR-24. Have you seen those ratcheted ones?
I know. You know what? I have never seen those before, but you want to know my take? It sucks.
Mm.
Sorry. Anybody that believes the ratcheted one is good, more power to you. I'm not putting those down, but I don't believe in them because now you're going to rely on the ratchet. There's not going to be as much power. You lose your body mechanic.
Yes, and that was kind of the point I was going into, so thank you so much. I was going to get into that. You know, like I said, some people think that the ratcheting aspect of the PR-24 is awesome, and, you know, being someone that loves the Tanfa, the traditional Tanfa for what it is, I do like being able to train to loosen the grip slightly, but still keep the grip. You know what I mean. And, you know, anyone out there that does Japanese martial arts knows what I'm talking about. And to be able to control where the baton part stops, because like with a ratchet, you know, and I've seen this with a ratchet, you can swing it, but if it stops three quarters of the way around its arc, then you've got your Tanfa, you know, probably not in a position lined up with your forearm to be able to block or strike with. At that point, you're going to have to find a way to, you know, get that baton part lined up with your forearm if you wanted it that way, you know, and that second is going to cost you time. So, you know, are there, you know, advantages and disadvantages to the ratchet part of the Tanfa? Yeah, of course. You know, every weapon's got its strengths and weaknesses and stuff like that. You know, personally, I think it's just how you train. But I personally also think that, you know, the ratcheting part is, like you said, if people rely on it too much, and then if that baton ends up, like, not in the place where you want to put it after it hits something, you know, then you're going to have to loosen your grip anyway to reposition it. So you might as well learn how to use it, right?
Right. And the thing is, Sifu, the more moving parts you have, the more chance you have of failure.
Yes. Yes, and that works with any machine, right?
Exactly.
You know,
all right.
With any machine, you know, the KISS concept. Keep it simple, stupid, you know. Now, do I think that it's wrong to modify weapons? No, of course not. I mean, you know, everything has a place for improvement, so to speak. But, you know, I also believe that, you know, there comes a point where with any machine, if you over-modify it too many times, there comes a point where it almost becomes useless, right? The machine, there'll be too much stuff on the machine to do the task that it was meant to do, you know? So, but do I think it's cool to modify any machine or any weapon? Yeah, go for it. You know, I'm all for it because, you know, there's always some type of modification that martial artists make to their own weapons. For example, you know, for my spears, when I compete in wushu, I would put ball bearings into the tip so it would rattle because it sounds cool and it places more attention for the judges to pay attention to the tip, right?
Right.
And it sounded cool. For when I was in college, in my college age years, when I used to play around and compete with a nunchaku, I would take lead tape and weight the end of my nunchakus for greater speed. And then I discovered, oh, well, duh, I can just shorten the chain. But, you know,
yeah.
It's like, so, you know, we all modify our weapons to fit us and our personal expression of martial arts. And, you know, I think it's the ability to modify and innovate weapons for your own personal expression. I think it's important because, you know, it gives you that personalized take on what you're learning. Especially if you're learning a traditional martial art, you know. I mean, if you're learning a traditional martial art, then chances are the katas you learn have not changed in hundreds of years. But each practitioner will put their own take and their own expression and their own flavor to their weapons forms or their kata. It's, you know, bound to happen.
I absolutely agree with that because I've taken, you know, I studied Wing Chun for a while and I've taken several seminars and the first form, Sulam Tao, Little Idea, I've learned five different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Literally five different ways to do it. Now, what you're talking about, modification, is great for a performance aspect, and you didn't ruin the integrity of what the weapon was meant to do.
Exactly. Now, if I had done something like... let's see. I'm trying to think of something like really wild. Like, okay, so if I put a chain, if I put a rope dart on the end of my nunchakus, right? Well, granted, probably not like an, you know, 10-foot rope or anything like that. If I put a rope dart on the end of my nunchaku, you know, would it still work as a nunchaku? Well, yeah, but then now you're talking about, you know, the extra like 5 feet of rope. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, although, you know, now that I think about it, I want to try something like that, to put a rope dart on the end of a nunchaku and see what, you know, see how effective it is.
That would scare the hell out of me. I'd worried about that dart come back and sticking me in the eye.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, now that I think about it, you know, as long as I keep hold of the dart,
Well, at that point, though, Rusty, you'd have to modify the technique. You couldn't be doing all the switches and flips. You'd may have to do for the lack of a better term, you may have to do a forehand redondo motion at your side instead to be more of a safety factor.
Exactly. And, you know, I might just try something like that. I got an old pair of nunchaku over here, and I might just try it only because, and see, this is one of the things that I think is useful for if you modify your weapons. It allows you to see if you can apply your body mechanics, as we've both been talking about, but also how to modify those body mechanics and the principles of the weapon, right, without reinventing the wheel, and still use those principles based on adapting to the weapon. So it is teaching us a lot about adaptation I'm really thinking about this. The stick now, of rope dart
because,
at the end of a pair of chucks. Because I do
right. You're a bullwhip enthusiast. Wouldn't you have to modify the snap and everything else to work as though it was a bullwhip?
Yeah. Yeah, I would, because the weighting would be different. And you've got that big old dart on the end, right? So, you know, could I use, you know, something like, because I do want to try this, actually, now that we're talking about it. I do want to try attaching a rope dart on the end of a pair of nunchaku because I do rope dart and I do chain whip and I, you know, whip and stuff like that. I want to see what types of modifications I would have to do to my own technique without using it like a bullwhip, because just thinking about it and visualizing it in my head, I know that if I used it like a bullwhip, it wouldn't be effective in that sense with the, you know, with a rope dart on the end of a nunchaku. However, if I used it more like a rope dart at the proper range, and then if I came into medium or short range, keep a hand on the dart part of it, that's when it starts being used as a flail or a nunchaku, like the way it's supposed to be, but also as a bullwhip at that point. So, you know, now that I think about it, you know, it's actually a great way for people to learn about, you know, modifying their own training for the particular uses and stuff like that. So, you know, interesting. You know,
that's
Bob, if I do something like it is, you know, if you know, Bob, if I do something like that, like, you know, put a rope dart on the end of a pair of nunchaku or something like that, I'll have to take a picture of it and put it out there and see what I come up with as far as the bullwhip and stuff. And, you know, I mean, we've already had, like in the Philippines, speaking of bullwhips, we've already had people modifying their bullwhips specifically for the time and their surroundings. Like, for example, there've been whip masters in the Philippines that would attach a sharpened spoon to the end of their bullwhip. Will it still crack like a bullwhip? It probably wouldn't make the nice sound, but boy, if it hit you, it would completely cut you. And I've heard of instances where the masters, again, would tie sharpened spoons to the end of their bullwhips and whip it out and literally bury the spoon in trees. And that's freaking scary.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And, isn't it?
And we need to put a disclaimer out, though, Rusty. I know you're going to use them, but if you modify something like this, you don't know what you're doing quite yet, wear protective gear. A cup, goggles for sure.
Yeah, yeah, definitely the disclaimer, because, you know, when I was younger, I met too many teenagers that would try to make their own nunchucks, quote unquote. And, you know, personally, I think that if you don't know what it's really called and all you know them as is nunchucks or chucks, don't even try it, because it just shows that you don't have the training or at least the history behind the weapon. Now, that might seem a little harsh to people out there, but think about it. I mean, it's kind of like, that'd be like some, you know, teenager just, you know, labeling every firearm out there as a gun. Here's a rifle. Oh, it's a gun. You know?
Right, right.
Here's an M16. It's a gun. I mean, you know, it just becomes so generic at that point, you know, and a lot of times when people just use a generic term, it's only because that they don't have training in it. You know, it's a gun. It's a chuck. I made a pair of chucks. You know, and you kids that would make their own quote unquote chucks, you know, out of, you know, eye screws and you know, pieces of, you know, 2x4. Literally,
oh,
2x4.
God, yeah.
You know, so you've got like these 2x4 chucks, and it's like, really? You know, and then they end up hitting themselves. I don't know how many YouTube videos are out there of people hitting themselves with a pair of nunchaku because they just don't know what they're doing, you know, or they watch YouTube and they try to learn it from there, and, you know, and another disclaimer, you can't necessarily learn martial arts from just film or book alone.
Yes.
You know, now there are a lot of people that would disagree. You know, I've had this discussion on a forum called Martial Arts Planet, and I commented on a forum subject like that. You know, I said, no, I think it's not a good idea to only learn martial arts from just books or magazines or something like that. And some kid got on the forum and basically just chewed me out, you know, and saying, well, you know, what do you do if you've got no access to a dojo or anything like that, you know? And I said, you know what? That's a little different. However, you know, once you can get to the point where your parents can drive you or you can drive even to the next city and study with an instructor for, you know, even a day and just come back once a month, that's possible. And then you use the books and magazines and the video as a reference, you know, but, you know, you can't, you're going to, you know, are people going to consider themselves black belts from YouTube videos? I hope not. That would drive me insane. All right. So for our listeners out there, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And we have our special guest of the day, Humberto Gonzalez, holding on the line with us. And let's go ahead and bring his mic up here.
Hello.
Here. Humberto, welcome to Dynamic Dojo. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm good. I'm quite excited. I'm a bit nervous. Hi, everybody.
Hi. Don't be nervous. Our show with me and Pooh Bob, we're all about having guests on and just kind of like, you know, hanging out. It's like, you know, let's have a cup of coffee. Let's have some food. Let's chill out. Let's talk. And it just so happens that sometimes people call in and, you know, get in on the conversation, but we'll see.
Cool.
I mean, it's Sunday. It's President's Day weekend. I don't know how many people are actually listening right now because I don't have access to my live link feed right now when we're live. We find out later. Oh, we have one of our listeners, our regular listeners on the line with us. We have Deborah Evans on the line with us. How you doing?
Hello.
Deb? Thanks for listening. But she's on the chat board and she's just hanging out. So Humberto,
very cool.
I really am excited to have you on the show because I really wanted to talk about the innovating of martial arts weapons. And I've seen some of the videos that you posted on our page, and I saw some of the pictures of some of these cool weapons on our page also. And I would love it if you could, number one, tell our listeners a little bit about your experience with these weapons, you know, whether or not, you know, you studied with someone at one point or, you know, whatever. And to let know also, you know, what got you excited about, you know, innovating on traditional weaponry. So if you could tell us a little bit about your weaponry, that'd be good.
Well, you know, I think since I was a kid, I had always draw pictures. I'm visually intuitive with the world, you know, but somehow I understand the interconnective of what's moving and how we move. So there's like everything I see is as a cycle, you know. The galaxy spirals, we're born with a spiral behind our head. You know, you cut a tree in half, it's got spirals. There's always this motion.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to dance when I was younger, and I had always watched Kung Fu theater growing up, you know. But
I love it.
You know, I mean, I grew up on Gordon Liu and all sorts of, you know, different high-flying kung fu movies. And I saw, like, Bruce Lee. I think my mother took me to a theater. Or I remember watching that movie. It was something attached to me when I was a kid. So as a kid, I experimented with a lot of different things. You know, you pick up a broomstick, you twirl it around, it falls over, and you pick it up, and like I just used to do this, like when I would draw a picture, you know. Oh, I draw a picture, and oh man, I messed up. I gotta erase it, and then go back and do it again. So, through those kinds of trial and errors, and then having a mother who was training on the police force, like every now and then she'd show me some kind of cool move that she learned from the training in self-defense. So I was really fascinated with self-defense, but I was more fascinated with the way these guys moved around each other in the film and how, like, they had – I understood timing. I started to actually pick up that there was choreography in it. As a young kid, I used to think it was real. But then I started to see the choreography in it, and I started to practice different things. And then I got into a lot of street fights when I was a kid, and I tried. I remember one time I tried to fight a dude and do something that I saw in a movie, and I learned real quick that it didn't work. And, you know, so I got my butt whooped, and I was bullied in school, and I just kind of like, on my downtime, I was trying to see, where's this warrior inside of me that could beat up these guys that keep beating me up, you know? Oh, man, I start learning how to use nunchucks and everything. They ain't going to mess with me because they never messed with Bruce, you know? So I went through this kind of crazy ordeal. You know, I have puberty going on, and then you grow up, and it's like, man, you know, you find these different ways of expressing. And so I had basically took it upon myself to hit myself in the head several times to learn that that was not a way to do things. And then something happened when I was about 19. And let me tell you, this is a beautiful, beautiful thing, because some martial artists I've spoken to through this journey that I've taken have kind of helped me to understand something that took place in my life that let me understand what took place. So I had a harmonic convergence when I was about 19 years old. And this harmonic convergence was basically the do or die. You got to fight for your life. You got to make sure that you don't quit. It's like every ounce inside of you. I was to the point where I was blind. I couldn't see anything. And something magnificent happened. It was like I went into the very core, the center of my brain. All these little things about being the master, being in tune, being close, everything all of a sudden made sense. And everything that was happening fast began to happen slow. I felt like I was in a moment that I had always prepared for when I was a kid. And it never fermented until this moment at 19. So from there, my brain changed. Everything about the way I saw the world changed. I started picking up weapons. I kind of understood a feel. There was a feel that I had. And then I started experimenting. I made wooden dummies. So I started, like, really kind of, like, training myself. But then I was always looking at information. You know, I was reading books. So it wasn't like I actually, how can I say, I made a show myself, but I had to take everything that was written, everything that I seen, seriously. And then at some point in my life, I got a chance to actually train with a grandmaster, Jerry Fastby Fontanez. And that gentleman kind of brought to light a lot of things that I was missing, and I'm still missing. I always knew that I was missing, because I evidently I could swing a five sectional staff and two of them at one time, and sometimes I dazzle myself wondering how do I do this, but it's because I always say it's coming from something inside of me that as an artist is able to express this. I understand what I'm doing, but now I have to put a science behind this, and I need other scientists that have been there examining certain things to help me to do that, you know, because it's like an exchange. Here I am, I'm kind of like the Kung Fu Panda. Who's going to be the, where's this guy? And, you know, always play. And then you wind up finding out, wait a second, because for 12 years I didn't do nothing with this. I was scared to do anything with bringing this out into the public. And so I hit rock bottom, and then my staff called me, and my sword collection thing started calling me, and then it was like, boom, my brain had another epiphany. So here I am talking to you guys. I'm a long-winded character. You know, you guys are talking for about an hour anyway, so.
I would never be able to do this show without Bob, because I can't talk by myself. You know, it's like I get tired of hearing myself, but Bob, that's why I love Bob as my co-host. So, you know, the first photo I saw of your weaponry was like amazing. I forget how many months ago it was, but it was a little while ago. And it was like, I thought, oh, the guy has like a C-section staff. And then I blew up the picture and I went, holy crap, that's got like 12 sections on it. How did he do that? And I think I commented on that. I'm like, how did you do that? Did you buy it that way? Or did you make it? And when you said that you made it, I was like, all on that. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this is incredible, because I don't know if you were listening before we put you on. We were talking about, you know, what would happen if I put a, you know, rope dart on the end of a nunchaku.
You use the nunchuck and then you use the rope dart for long distance catching. You're switching up. You're alternating. You got options.
Yeah, and I'm like, you know, this would work as long as I, you know what range I'm in and stuff. And I'm really tempted to try it because I got a pair of, you know, old nunchucks out here that I haven't used in like years, and I got like several rope darts. You know, I'm willing to try it. Why not? You know, and you're what I like about your sense of innovation and is that not only is it an art to you, it's like a way of life. Now, when did you actually start coming up with these, you know, multi-section staves and, you know, the nunchaku with the sword on the end? Oh my gosh, tell our listeners about the weapons, please do.
Yeah, there's Ninjato, I think, sword that I chained to a pair of nunchucks. But it doesn't end there. I want to put another chain on the end of those nunchucks and put a Ninjato on that side. So in experimenting with things, I know it's possible. I know it's attainable. But, you know, what it is like I'm saying these are options that are there. If you could do it with this weapon, why can't you do it with this? And the thing is that, oh, wait, there's these factors. Well, with everything, you don't hold a samurai sword by its blade, you hold it by its handle. So in the sense that you would use these weapons, there's a principle that you have to go by holding the handle the right way, as to say. And that's basically to use it in its proper techniques and its forms. But as far as for film, expression, to be able to have an expanded option, an expanded library that, all right, here I am, I'm swinging a pair of nunchucks at you. I'm doing figure eight way nunchuck techniques, and then whoom, I'm whipping it at you like a three-sectional, then whoom, I'm whipping it at you like a bullwhip, and now I'm twirling it around like it's a bow staff, and then I'm folding it around my back in a boxer's position. So what happens is now I'm taking all these different weapons forms, and then I'm putting it in a blend. It's just a twist. It's like you got nunchuck, you got all these different techniques. Now you got the options to go and pull those resources at the fly. Because I got at one point I remember swinging nunchucks, and I was like, well, if I hit the guy and he backs up and he's falling away, I got to kind of run up to him and maybe keep hitting him again. But it'd be cool if I was like Spider-Man and just spun a web at his face at the same time, like long distance. And then all of a sudden I had an epiphany. It was like, wait a second. And I knew it. It was something I knew inside me since I was a kid, and it just rose out of me. It was this hidden box of creativity that besides me drawing stuff on the pictures and listening to music and being able to like just think with the human brain that we were given with, you know, I was like, wow, I could actually do this. Like, and I felt it. And the minute I made them, I would say there was a harmonic conversion, a transition that I feel like God blessed me with some kind of knowledge to be able to move them around in a way to say, hey, this is how you could translate this. Now the journey is going to be a lot harder than the gift itself.
Yeah.
The gift itself is very easy. You know, the gift itself is very easy because, I mean, I had to learn that, like, you know, I was at one point like, well, you know, my staffs, they're there, you know, I got to do something with them. And the person, somebody said to me, you better do something with them because all that is on the floor, that's five staffs chain linked together, your 7-1, your sword chain linked with that. Without you, they don't come to life. And I'm thinking, dang, that's an extension. Everybody else at some point that gets involved and does this, or even that they're already doing it in their own sense, they just don't understand the blend. At some point, I was given this gift, and I said, this is a responsibility. So I've had people go, why don't you sell them, do this, that, and other thing. I'm like, look, there's an art. There's an art behind this, and I want to draw this picture in film. I want to be able to try to, like, give someone a new way to look at something, a new twist, because somehow, some way or another, I know with everything in my being that this is just something that was given to me as a gift from the universe. So now here I am on the radio show, and after 12 years of denying myself, because I was scared, I used to think, if I become rich and famous, I'm going to be a prick. I got to go, excuse my language, I got to go and paint this house or do demolition and climb up a roof and shave off a roof and everything. And I used to shave off a roof with two wooden spade and shovels, and so people used to think I was already crazy. I'm a, you know, hyperactive or whatever, but that's just how I was. I used to work 12 hours a day ripping off roofs, go home, and then swing my staff for an hour or two.
Wow. I'm betting if you think you're crazy, you're in good company then.
Yeah. Yeah, me and Bob are nuts.
Oh, yeah, certifiably nuts. So tell us, what was the first weapon that you modified? Why did you decide to do it? And why did you choose that weapon to modify?
You know, I modified, I don't think, you know, what happened was I was swinging the two nunchucks. And like I said, I went to swing, the guy fell, and then I had to lunge in or I had to have a spider web. And I didn't have a spider web, so I said, well, how do I do something? You know what? Wait a second. If I take the three sectional out and I threw it, and I'm like, what? And I try to do some things with the three sectional that I could do with the nunchucks. And it just seemed all of a sudden that I just had an epiphany. And it was then I made the five sectional staff, which is, it gives you the kind of like these new options. And from there, I saw a bunch of other things. I started to, like, I couldn't even unfixate myself from drawing pictures and then building these little things and experimenting with them and saying, what's going on here? And at one point, I kind of scared myself, to be honest. I get a little scared, you know what I mean? See, everybody asks me, the number one question for everybody out there, the number one question I already know is how many times you whack yourself in the head with them or somewhere else. And I have on some few occasions, not many. Since 1998, I would say if I've swung them around over 1,000 or 2,000 times, I might have hit myself maybe 20 times. You know, good. That's what happens when you don't pay attention.
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
man.
With any weapon,
yeah,
you're not paying attention, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You were going for hitting yourself in the head. I was going, how many times did you hit yourself in the groin?
Yeah, well, two times. Two times that I can remember.
Oh,
anything
no,
else, I think
remember.
It just erased my memory.
The other times, you just blacked out.
Yeah. You could really hurt yourself. And, like, the one I'm extra cautious with is, as far as being able to express, is the sword that's chained to a pair of nunchucks to
yeah.
it.
Now,
oh, yeah. Now, you got these whipping techniques, but then you got to know about range and how to position it. And then if you come back, you have the sword in a slicing position and angle. So I've done everything I could to be as conservative as far as my expression with people, but that's why people say, oh, why aren't you going faster here or there? Well, I want some people to kind of get their wheels turning here. Like, and now I'm in the middle of my kitchen. I'm not going to cut the kitchen plant or the stove in half.
Right.
And that's basically on the this is just a guy who had a passion who come home from work, painted up, or ripping roofs and doing all this stuff. And I was sharing it. I believe there's an art there. You know, I see so many fight scenes in the movie nowadays, and there's some cool things, and everything's been resorted to CGI animation, which is kind of cool. It adds a new flavor. It's another artist's expression. But what about something that comes from inside that can be moved around with the natural body mechanics and everything that somehow can be a blend of all the different things that you like, all the different things that you like? Because I like the bow staff. I like the short bow. I like the sword. I like the nunchuck. I like the whip. I like the three sectional. Well, what could give me that kind of a feel all in this, you know, because I somewhere along the way I got bored of swinging the chucks. I said, oh, I'm going to swing the three sectional. And this is the other thing, guys. I have created something that could be likened to the Swiss Army pocket knife weapon. So everybody's seen a three sectional staff that connects together as a bow staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It connects together. Well, imagine a five sectional that can do that. And then it can disconnect and become a three-sectional. And then it can become a five-sectional. Then the nunchucks that are connected on the end, if they're the right size made for that, you can actually take those off and swing them around. And then connect those together and have a scrimmer.
Wow.
So what?
Wow. Hey, Rusty, wouldn't it be cool if he had a booth down at Dragon Fest displaying his weapons?
I think that would be a great idea.
That would be insane. Now, since a three-sectional staff, Umberto, is, you know, three pieces of equal length, is it still the same length as a three-sectional, the five-sectional
no.
being? Okay, so it is. Are they equal lengths in sections or no?
No. The middle piece of the five-sectional is different from both receding ends that are like nunchaku, but there's different variations of a five-sectional I have, too. Like, as far as you know, the distance, I would say there's about a foot more length from a three-sectional in some cases, but I also have a five-sectional staff mini that I'm making. It's kind of like you have a three-sectional nunchuck, but it's kind of like that size, but a five-sectional staff option. So it'll allow you to actually grip it in certain ways. You can throw punches and twirl it around. I would say it's more user-friendly to anyone who does anything with Sansetsukans like that. But I'm looking to make blades come out of the end of these five sectionals, man, and do some kind of cool movies where, like, you know, you got this thing as a staff, and then all of a sudden you're fighting the guy's staff forms, and then you one-link it out. Boom, it's a flail staff, and then you take out the other end, and then next thing you know, you swing a three-sectional, and then it breaks apart into a five-sectional, mm-hmm. and then it's like, what the heck just happened? Oh. And then you're whipping it around, and you're fighting a bunch of people, and you're trapping them, you're locking them. That's another thing. You can trap. And then you have the option with the other end to strike or trap. Mm-hmm. And because it has these different links, it allows you to have these different options. Now, I've had people go, oh, well, what if I grab it? I grab it. You know, I have friends tell me, grab it. Boom. Oh, ow. There you go. Well, what if I did it this way? Then, oh, ow. Because what happens is you got these options. And then it's like, you know, You don't. It's unpredictable in that sense as far as an art, if you're going to use it in combative form. But mm-hmm. as far as an art, you can make it something that's very unpredictable because somebody's mind is trained to see a nunchuck in front of their face, so they're prepared for that. Then all of a sudden it comes at them like a three-sectional. You know, there's a certain play that comes in part of the mind when you have to make those kinds of adjustments. And I've actually experimented with people who know that my background isn't from traditional roots, but it really is. I dedicated a lot of time to actually look and observe from these movies, and then once I started to communicate with grandmasters out there and hear about the history, I started to see the unfolding of something that was inside of me mm-hmm. deeply all my life. You know, I mean, I want to make some kind of futuristic Bruce Leeism. I've been waiting for Bruce Lee to be reincarnated, or then to do a computer animated movie with him or something. You know.
Oh, sweet.
I love that kind of stuff. Make them use my stats. Go ahead. You know, let me do CGI. I have crazy ideas. Like, there's so many things, like, you can do. I mean, you can walk and talk and chew gum at the same time. It's possible. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible. And, you know, as far as, like, nobody's walking around with swords or anything like that nowadays, but we go to a dojo and you learn how to do these things. So you can play with that. We all have our toys, you know? And I just think that I made some pretty cool toys, and it just took me and my knucklehead being shy and kind of scared for a long time to come out of my shell and do this, you know? It's a hard, long journey. It's not easy. It comes with its blessings and its heartaches, let me tell you. Because I've been challenged on many occasions. Where certain things, so like somebody says, oh, you shouldn't whip it around your head like that because it leaves yourself open for an attack. And my frame of thinking is, look, you know what? Nobody's built with a force field around them. The best you could do is be ready. Be ready.
Yeah.
Be ready.
I love that you mentioned that because, you know, I know Bob's gotten the same kind of questions. I know I've had the same kind of questions. And a lot of times, you know, other people forget that, you know, if you're fighting in real time, you know, you don't see a lot of the openings that, you know, that they see if someone's doing it slow, right? Like you were saying, see people saying to you, oh, you're leaving your head open or something like that, you know, and I call those kind of people like the YouTube people because they watch a video twice and then they see the weakness, but in the thick of it. You know, if they're actually, you know, if someone's, I can just imagine this, someone's fighting you, like, let's say they have a knife, and you've got, like, this five-section staff with a knife on the end or something like that, you know, if they watch the video of you, they could go, oh, well, you left this open, but in the middle of it, they wouldn't know what to do. You know,
that's why I always say it's different when they're in front of me. That's why I always say it's different when you're in front of me.
Yeah, exactly. You'd eat them up for breakfast, and, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up because, like, I think some other show I mentioned the same thing that, you know, oh, people can see what's wrong with something after they watch a video twice or something like that. But in the middle of it, they can't figure. Yeah, they're master critiquers. But in the middle of it, they don't know what to do. You know, so that's happened to you too, Bob, right? I've had people, like, tell me that, oh, that lock isn't going to work in a scream. And I'm like, come punch at me. Yeah. And I guess I don't want to be punching at Humberto when he got like one of them long weapons.
Yeah,
I'm
like
probably going to hit
him
in the back of the head.
Say, I could have beat Bruce, you know? Yeah, after you watch this video like 10 or 20 times or something. Like, come on, man. That's a whole other thing. The Bruce Lee in the movies could have beaten the Bruce Lee in real life if the Bruce Lee in the movie was alive. And they, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah.
Bruce Lee was a human being. There was an expression that people were trying to show, that he was trying to show, that would kind of enlighten us to, look, if we had a fight for our families, if somebody broke into our house right now, I'm not sitting there trying to fight nobody. You understand?
Right.
Like, there's at that point, I'm going to be in total expression. My total expression is going to come from the core root of my love for my kids, for those who I'm concerned for. And out of that love, there's going to produce an inflamed rage, as to say, but its core is love. It comes from the strongest emotion. And in that, I'm going to do everything I can to protect them. And there's a certain survival mechanism that switches, that could switch in all of us if we're pushed to that point, that kind of just brings you to this sharper mind, that kind of brings you to this place that, like, you know, you got to forget who you are, because if not, you're going to wind up, everything's all disastrous here. And I've seen that's where some people fold in some situations and things like that. And life is kind of training us to be that, the super mental consciousness of things, because that's what it's like. You get into the super mental consciousness. You get to a point where you're heightened awareness. You really do that. You see these expressions in the movies, and people say, oh, that's cool special effects. There's a key thing here, though. There's an expression that's going on about how the mind works and what pushes us to the point that our mind gets to that point. And then it makes us just a little bit different. It just makes us just a little bit different, you know? And, I mean, you got this guy who can cut a BB in the air with a samurai sword.
Yeah.
Tell me how you're going to get past him if he comes at you like you're a BB coming at him, buddy. Oh, I could beat him because his technique is this way and that way. Like, you know, I'm not even here to challenge nobody. I'm here to introduce an art. And I've been through that. So, like, I know there's people on the radio who might hear, and I've had people on my own Facebook that I do that. But, like, I'm here to bring an art, an expression, and from there, if God gave me this gift, which I believe with all my being he did, it's expressed through other people. It becomes something even more. I mean, there's a beauty behind all of that, and I think it's fascinating to even be like, whoa, what's going on here? Because I was the kid that watched everybody, you know, doing Cynthia Rothrock, all these crazy movies. I was a diehard, avid fan, doing this stuff in my living room, probably like the rest of everybody else. I just took it a step further. I got to a point that something else has happened to me. And, you know, I think when it comes to weapons, you know, a piece of paper could be used as a weapon, but is it because you're using it as an expression? No, you're using it as a weapon. When you're in a school, you're using it for technique so you can kill, but you understand this technique, but it's also an expression. Because that expression will come to life, let somebody come into your home and try to take your mom or your kid or somebody that you love. That expression is what I think there's a true beauty in that, because we all are fighting to live. Even as we talk and we're breathing, everything inside of us is still fighting to live. There's an art behind all that, and that cycle of an art is what makes us sing, what makes us dance, what makes us, you know, feel good, what makes us feel sad. There's an art behind all of that. And I think, you know, part of my doing all these staffs has really taught me that in this journey, you know. And I'm sorry if I talk a lot. Everybody told me, you know, don't talk too much. But I've been waiting for a long time.
You can walk. You can talk. You can talk. You
absolutely
do.
Well, Umberto, out of all the weapons you've made, you've modified, what do you feel is the most interesting?
Oh, man. You know, I really like, I have this one that's called, it's a 7-sectional I have. I really find that one a little bit more fun. The more options it has, the better fun it is. At some point, you know, I've dissected this in my head 1,000 different ways. Like Rosita, right? Is that your, that's Rosita? You said, you know, there can become to a point where it can become where you're basically using a wooden whip. And, I mean, can you use a wooden whip? Yeah. But, mm-hmm. I mean, we're not going to build a 100-foot wooden whip and fight with it, you know?
Right, right.
So if you modify it so long, it can hinder its use of expression. So there's, mm-hmm. there's this orbit. There's an orbit. Just like the Earth and the Sun, everything has an orbit. It's got to be so precise. It's got to have its mileage. The same way we have an orbit around us that is going to have a mileage. Because even with a rope dart, you ain't going to swing a 50-foot rope dart,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Exactly.
It's going to be a little difficult. You're going to have a lot of, maybe you might do a couple, few little things, but the options ain't going to be as what you could do if that thing was only like 6 or 7 feet long.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah, there's a certain limit, I think, to all of those things. And, you know, I like the sword nunchuck, I want that to become a staff that has a sword on the end that breaks apart into this sword nunchuck.
Oh, that would be badass.
And then the nunchucks can come apart, and you can swing them around, and then attach it back.
Oh my God, that would be badass!
So, and in the middle of the five sectional, I want to have where there's two short swords that are fed into each other, so that the five sectional middle slides out, and then these two short swords with these nunchucks hanging off of them connect together too. So, man, if anybody from Star Wars, anything like crazy movies listening, I got a plethora of ideas and know how to do all these things. I experimented with them for so long, and it doesn't even stop there. I got over 140 ideas that I know could be used. I got basically 200 and something that I've drawn down, but I've had to sit here and seriously think for over 16 years, and 140 of them are what I feel could definitely become in the family. And maybe about 40 or 50 of them would become something that could get mainstreamed into tournaments and things like that, you know? So
that would be cool.
Boom, I'll hit you with the staff sword, and then ching, it just gives you that option out of nowhere. So learn about our names. You know, we have technologies, and I've thought of different ways. I mean, being in construction, I've learned a lot about different engineerings, and so I thought of a lot of different ways to introduce something that could be more user-friendly besides five-sectional and seven-sectional. But, even just the fact that I have one that's smaller, that's the one that I think is going to become something really – it's going to be like a new nunchuck, you know, if anything.
Oh,
I mean,
cool.
Nunchuck, yeah, so it just gives you options, man. Flexibility gives you options, and that's kind of how my brain thinks. Flexibility and stab. Flexibility and stab. Thrust.
Right on.
And then slash, you know, or something of that angle. It's just, or move around. You're like, you get the three sectional. If you hit it, if you got this thing and the five sectional tries to hit you and you put your arm up to block it, and the nunchuck ends are the ones that are being swung at you, but the middle staff and everything is extended, you're going to get hit with the other piece. It does something that's totally different. Not only that, it grabs. It's another way it grabs real quick. It kind of paqua and pushes the object and diverts its energy. So it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat. You know, I love this stuff. I can't wait to start being able to teach more people about it and share this with people. Hopefully I could do films. I got some people looking into things. And in that, you'll be able to see an art. I think that's been waiting to see for a long time, you know? It's not CGI. Two crazy stunts. Once they start doing all that, I'll forget about it. The lid's going to be off.
Right.
You know? So, but yeah.
So, Bob, speaking. No, that's right. Bob. I can't even talk right now.
Bob,
I just took a painkiller because my back is killing me. But
no, her ear was killing her because I was talking in it for like 10 minutes straight.
No, and I'm like, blah, 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 and I'm going to drive later. I don't think that's going to be very nice. Bob, know, you briefly mentioned Dragon Fest. Can you go ahead? If you could tell Humberto a little bit about it, I think it would be very cool if he had a booth there. Maybe he could talk to some people over there about possibly either A, selling his wares or getting it featured in a movie somewhere. So if you could tell him
that'd
a little bit
awesome.
About, yeah.
Yeah. Now I know you're on the East though, Humberto. This is a Dragon Fest is a convention that's going to be held in Burbank, May 18th. Full of vendors, movie guys, artistry. The Simpsons drawers are gonna artists are gonna be there. Don Wilson was going to be there, except he's gonna be at the Cannes Film Festival. Cynthia Rothrock, Lorenzo Lamas, those guys are gonna be there. So if there's any way of you getting a booth out here, that would be amazing because they expect at least 1,000 people.
I've actually gone to Alan Goldberg's event. I've met Don. I've met Cynthia. I just talked to Cynthia about, like, you know, it'd be cool if I could fight her with a bisexual staff if she got the three-sexual staff because, you know, she knows how to use it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, we were joking around. She was like, that would be really cool. But I've gone to some of these things, and this is actually what's actually helped me to get connected with some of the other people that I've come in contact with and things like that. As far as traveling out of state, I got to see how my finances are. I don't know how things are going to turn out after the radio show or next month. I have somebody who wants to do an exclusive interview with me that does reports for CNN. So,
cool.
Oh, very cool.
You know, I just feel like I got the ball rolling a little bit heavier this year. I'm just trying to give it a real push. You know, I'm in my labor pains now. The contractions are getting hotter. So I got to push this baby out, man.
There you go.
You know, somebody get this baby out of me or something, you know. It's definitely, I think, you know, in today's day and age, everything evolves to the degree and expression. People have found different ways to make art, you know, and I just found different ways to make different weapons and make it an art. And from there, I think, you know, people were going to be able to do the same thing. I met a guy in my journeys who actually was who actually invented his own kind of weapon too. And, you know, it was funny how, like, I actually bumped into him off of Facebook and we just got to talking. And the conditions that we met weren't all that happy and go lucky, but then we became really good friends. And he's doing stuff with film now. He wants to do something where we pit our weapons against each other. So there's talk. He actually invented something he calls the sword nunchuck or the sword chuck. And it's like a giant butterfly knife. And basically it opens up and it turns into like a sword, but it stays at a certain angle that you can swing it like nunchucks. So it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat.
Very cool. Now, do you sell your weapons? Because I think, you know, if you had a store on Etsy, people would be buying them up like hotcakes.
Yeah. I haven't gotten the I want to get into selling them. I'm hoping that if I can get a good kind of maybe possibly a movie deal somewhere, that it give me the kind of finances I'm looking for to actually start my own miniature Asian world type of thing. I'm thinking really big, guys. Didn't do anything for 12 years out of fear, but during those 12 years, I used to think a lot of different things. I think my mind in the background was preparing for something that, you know, I came to realize could potentially become bigger than I thought it was. So I think, wait, you know, this could be the whole world.
Martial arts. Yeah.
You know, that's a big, kind of big pill to swallow being, you know, a city boy. you know, I mean, I didn't live in the suburbs, you know, the ghetto was about two blocks away from my street, so I grew up around some kind of hefty conditions, and I have my rugged ends, you know. But I've learned through the passion of loving this stuff. It's taught me quite a bit, a lot, you know. And it's like my other kids, you know. It's like it's my kid in some sense. Speaking of, can my kids say hi?
Sure. Bring them on.
Hey,
they
guys.
Can say hello to online radio world.
hold on. This is my daughter, Julia. She's going to say hi.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Julia. Hi, Julia.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Welcome to Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio.
Thank you for letting me say hello.
Is there anyone out there in online radio land that you want to say hi to?
I don't know. I like to say hi to everybody who's listening.
Awesome. You hear
Very
that, everyone?
Cool.
You hear that, everyone out there? Julia says hello.
Thank you for letting my dad with his creative, artistic mind come on and say what he has to say.
Oh, it's our pleasure, honey. It's our pleasure.
Hi.
Thank you for saying hello.
You're welcome. Bye. Have a nice day.
Thank you.
You too.
Oh, my goodness. How beautiful.
This is Caitlin. This is Caitlin,
wow.
My baby.
What? Hello.
Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Caitlin.
How are you?
How are you doing?
We're doing, great.
Good.
Thanks for joining us on Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio. Is there anyone out there that you want to say hi to?
No.
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 Well, thank you for joining us on radio. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, my goodness. So cute.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello.
Oh, my goodness, Humberto. They're just so darling. Oh, my goodness.
I love what Julia said. His artistic, creative mind, like she wasn't coached on that.
No, she's funny. No, she's funny. She's a little artist herself. No, I didn't. I didn't say nothing. I just put it on.
Wow.
She was on shy mode. Yeah.
She's just absolutely. They're just both absolutely beautiful. Oh my goodness. So Humberto, we've only got about 8 minutes. So.
No problem.
Just to let everyone know out there, we've only got about 8 minutes. So for any listeners out there that have any questions for Humberto, you got 10 or 8 to 10 minutes to ask, 347-677-0699, or get on the chat board and start asking questions. One of our listeners says, okay, too much cuteness. That is a cuteness overload about your girls. Thanks, Deb, for the comment. Yeah, weren't they just too cute? So I have a quick question before we have to start wrapping up. For anyone out there, be it teenagers or adults that want to get into a similar activity, modifying weapons or anything like that, what advice would you give anybody?
Well, I would say if you don't want to wind up with a lost eye or a bump on your head, don't go the route I did because I did get hurt, you know. If you do have a martial arts studio around you, look up what kind of weapons programs that they have. Start learning how to twirl a staff and nunchucks. Start learning as much as you can because really those principles are integrated in some of these new things. To make it a lot easier to start learning things because of the dynamics of how things move. There's an importance of you don't want to lose your range. You need to have and stay within an orbit.
Right.
Try to do that. If you're going to go my route, you're going to have to dedicate a whole heck of a lot of time because I was a knucklehead. I mean, I used to cut school sometimes just to watch Kung Fu, okay? So don't do that either, you know, but that's kind of like where I have my rough points. But that's what I did, and I'd say the easiest route is to take it from somebody who has some kind of knowledge, knowing how things move around. Get into weapons, first of all. If you just fight, I'm a fighter. I use my hands and my feet. Okay, that's great. But, you know, take it as also learning an art, learning a way to move your own body or a mechanical device around you and having an awareness about things that helps you interconnect with those awareness juices that the brain can produce when things are moving slow, you know, but they're really
mm-hmm.
moving fast.
Right.
So it's it's kind of hard to say sometimes because I've really never had traditional training except the fact that my brain works a little different, but there was traditional training. But once I went into a dojo and started to experience some of the traditional training, I started to realize, whoa, this is kind of tough, you know? This is some pretty tough stuff. It takes some good push to the mind to really accomplish some of the things that you're looking to accomplish when you're actually going through certain curriculums, even forms, knowing how to learn from forms. That was kind of a weird thing for me because I never really learned forms. I just kind of went with a feel. But then I started to realize I had forms, but they were based on feel. So what was going on. So for people who are into forms, get the feel. If people who are into the feel, get some of the forms. You know? That, you know. Assume all weapons forms. There you go.
Awesome. Very awesome.
Very
so,
cool.
Sifu Bob, do you have any last questions before we have to wrap
One
it up?
One last question. Well, Umberto, do you feel that you could, that a weapon could be modified so much that it would become ineffective for what it was originally designed to be used for?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If a rope dart was 30 feet long, it would, you know, that would be modifying it. You know what I mean? So it would render its effectiveness. It would dim it down. You know, you bring that down to about 100 feet, then you got problems. So that's what I was describing. It's like there's an orbit, a range in which the cycle and the things that can be moved around doesn't exist. Once you get outside that orbit, things get a little crinkled. You know, you have different mechanics that don't work right anymore. So that's why I say, if the moon was moved 5 miles away from where it was, we'd have probably ocean problems. So it can cause problems. So you have to stay within a certain orbit. That's why, like, you know, you wouldn't give a 6-foot baton to a 2-year-old to twirl around.
Mm-hmm.
You might give him a 3-foot, to learn how to twirl around. So it's just that there's an orbit that they have and there's an orbit that you have. Everybody has their orbit in which everything moves around them. So that's why I think it's also important that certain sizes as far as the 5-sectional staff be considered, because not everybody has the same arm length as others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of the things that are involved depends on arm length if you want to do certain techniques. So that's what I've considered was everyone's orbit. Everybody has a different cycle, you know, but we're all bound to the same physics, you know, of things. May I say, Rashida, if anybody's listening out there, how they can find me or contact me if they have any interest? Or
absolutely. Yes, absolutely. That was the last question. How can people contact you?
Oh, okay. Well, you can find me. I'm a Facebooker, so you type in Dragon Warrior Staff. It's all one word, DragonWarriorStaff@gmail.com in the Facebook search engine, and you'll find me there. That's also my email, which is DragonWarriorStaff@gmail.com. And you can Facebook friend request me. Looking to interact, meet people. That's what I do. So I really thank you for having me on the show. I've been so nervous throughout the whole thing. Everybody's been hearing the jitterbug talk out of me. The butterflies in my stomach.
No worries. Thank you so much for joining us and telling us a bit about your creations and about your vision for these creations, because you know, when I was talking to Sifu Bob a little bit earlier, I you know what, this guy has like some serious true warrior heart, you know, to be able to, like, you know, bust out of, oh, I should, you know, I'm kind of scared of doing this, and just going out there and grabbing a dream and running with it. So you know, what luck to you, and you know,
funny,
if we ever have a similar show like this.
Funny because my name, actually, I found out 2 weeks after I brought my staff to a tournament, I found out that my name, which everybody made fun of because my name is Humberto, so I had all sorts of crazy names, but my name Humberto means renowned warrior. I was like, that's kind of crazy.
Oh, very cool.
That's very
so I said,
cool.
You know what, I was destined by name. I know it took me a long time. I'm humble about it, but at the same time, I had to build a certain confidence because, you know, when you get knocked down to such a degree, you get to a point that you're like, no way, no more.
Right.
And you see that you see this true gift that you have to offer, to build upon. And it's in that magic, in that moment, and in that existence, in your own human beingness of who you are, you want to be able to leave something for your kids, leave something for people to know you. You want to be known, but you also want to be able to give.
Exactly.
I hope eventually I'm traveling the world, being the best humanitarian I can be, because for a long time I just want to be able to contribute to help people. It's just one of those things. So
very cool. Well, thank you again so much for joining us, Umberto.
Thank you, Bob.
And we will see everybody next week. And
I think since we've got 10 seconds left, I announced Susan DeCarl's birthday this week. She says she's turning twice the legal drinking age, and everybody listening owes her 2 beers.
All right. Well, we'll see everybody next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Okay. Have a good week.
Hey, guys.